I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a new report that looked at a survey of 70,000 community college students. This is really interesting. 40% of the students who averaged an A in high school, grade point average, reported that they needed a developmental course in at least one subject at community college. B plus averages needed a brush up course more than 50% of the time. Those with B averages needed a course nearly 60% of the time. So if you look at all three levels, it accounts for 57% of the community college students needed to take a remedial course of some kind. Half of Hispanic college students, nearly a third of Black college students start their higher education paths at community colleges. So we wanted to get behind this and find out what's going on. Our guest is Dr. Michelle Cooper, president of the Institute for Higher Education Policy, one of the nation's more effective voices, most actually, in championing access and success for all students in post-secondary education. She addresses the needs of today's students, particularly underserved students, many of whom are low-income, students of color, and adults. And she looks at solutions to create change for students who encounter obstacles like this as they attempt to get through their post-secondary education. She's won many awards for her work in advancing economic and educational opportunities for all. Dr. Michelle Cooper, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
I am just amazed by these statistics. If you have an A average, 40% of these students at community college need a remedial course. And it turns out that if you have an A or a B plus or a B average, 57% of those students need to take remedial courses. What's behind this?
Well, the thing is, you know, community colleges play a very important role in helping students to gain access to college. They are open door institutions and they provide a wide range of opportunities and experiences for their students. And we now see that community colleges happen to be one of the growing aspects of the higher education sector. And the students who enroll in these institutions often have very high aspirations. In fact, about 84% of them will tell you that they intend to complete an associate's degree. And over half of them, about 53%, actually plan to get a certificate of some sort. But there is an alarming disconnect, as you have already revealed, between students' perception of their college readiness and the reality of attaining those degrees or credentials. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we find that way too many of them are, in fact, academically underprepared. And many end up taking one or more developmental education course while they are still enrolled at a community college.
So is the problem at the high school level? Are students getting better grades than they deserve to get?
I don't think it's that easy to say it's the high school or not, but there is definitely a disconnect between what students are learning before they get to college and what colleges expect them to know. And that has been a topic of much conversation in recent years in the post-secondary space. And things have come about to try to address that. One of the major efforts that you may be familiar with is the Common Core Readiness Movement. We also recently reauthorized the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. So there are steps being taken to make sure that there is a stronger alignment between high school standards and college standards.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Cooper, what are these remedial courses in math and in science that so many students have to take?
Like, what are they? They're the basic entry-level courses, like English 101, Math 101. They are the gateway courses for students so that they can then proceed into their major field of study. If students don't tend to pass these courses, these entry-level courses, they are not then able to pursue the higher-level math sequences or writing sequences that they often need to pursue a major.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we have statistics on this, but would you say that most of the students who are in those courses need to be in those courses or not?
Well, I think that's a topic of conversation. One of the things that people are talking about more and more is the fact that when students are placed in these developmental education courses, that the determination is usually based upon a placement test, that they will take the summer before they actually enroll in college. And so this one test can determine whether or not you get put in these courses. And sometimes it could be that you actually do need to be remediated or refreshed in some of these concepts. But other times it might be you just had a bad day. But nevertheless, given the large numbers of students that we see enrolling in developmental or remedial courses, it would lead one to suspect that it's probably more than just a bad day. It's probably that they're not learning some of the things that they should have learned prior to enrolling in college.
Is it so discouraging for a number of these students that they decide, I'm not going to follow through on this, I don't want to pay the money to take a remedial course, and I just don't have the time to do this, I want to get right into what it is I want to study, so as a result, they leave school. Does that happen?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that happens very often. Most of these students who are finding their, I won't say most, but many, many students who find themselves needing to take these courses have done all the right steps to prepare for college. They have taken the right classes, as you noted in your introductory comments. They've made good grades. They showed up on time. They filed all the paperwork. And then they get to a college and they are being told, oh, you actually don't need, you don't know what we think you should know.
Right.
That is quite discouraging. And for students who end up having to take more than one remedial class, they could end up in a spiral that's hard to get out of, and that does become very discouraging, and it makes it harder for them to pursue their degree interests.
Mm-hmm. And is there a case to be made that if you're going to study something that is language-related versus something that is more science or math-related, that it's okay maybe to not even have to take a remedial test in math? Maybe you won't be using it that much.
Well, that's something that people are often talking about as well. But one of the things, one of the obstacles with that part of the conversation is that, you know, students may need things down the road that they can't foresee in the immediacy. And for some of these courses, we're not talking about higher level math courses. We're talking about basic level math courses. So it is probably important that they have some type of understanding that could propel them regardless of what area they decide to pursue for further study. But what we don't want to do is make students, for example, take calculus or algebra if they're not going to pursue a STEM-related field. But the basic math, the basic concepts are things that most people should know.
I was reading about North Carolina. I wonder what your thoughts are about this. In 2013, North Carolina allowed students who had decent grades and who took enough English and math courses in high school to completely bypass the placement exams.
And that's starting to become a trend as well. Some states are also saying that they will no longer do remedial or developmental education classes at the four-year institutions, and they are just saying if that needs to happen, it has to happen only at the community college. I think people are starting to get more and more interested in this topic, because even though we're speaking about it within the context of a community college, remedial courses are often found, we find students taking them at both two- and four-year institutions. Students who have to take them are sometimes from low-income families, but they also can be from high-income families. So this is an issue that cuts across a variety of demographic profiles.
Mm-hmm. And yet when it comes to community colleges, where a number of minority students begin their college education, it seems to have an impact more on Hispanic and African-American students. Is that fair to say?
That is absolutely fair to say. Hispanic and African-American students are enrolled in community colleges in large numbers. Low-income students are enrolled in community colleges in large numbers, and so are first-generation college students. So students for whom we need to continue to stay a part of the education pipeline because it's good for them and good for society, we may, in fact, lose if we don't figure out productive ways to get them off of this remedial education track.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cooper, there seems to be a disconnect here, and I'm wondering what exactly it is between the preparation students have from high school and whether or not they're going to community college or to four-year university college somewhere, that they ought to be able to attend school without having to take a test for how well they have done, or for they shouldn't be having to take remediation because they've gone through school for so many years. Are we missing something? What is it we can do to keep people from having to take these kinds of tests because they are fully prepared?
That's a great question. And that's one of the things that the Common Core Standards Movement tried to do by saying if students were to pass these courses in high school, that would determine that they were ready for college-level work. Now, whether you like Common Core or not, I'm not sort of debating the merits of Common Core, but I am saying that there are ways that people at the high school level and at the collegiate level can work better together to figure out how to align standards so that students don't get caught in this trap. Because the people who get hurt the most are the students who are actually trying to do the right thing,
right,
and are finding out at the end of a placement score that they, in fact, don't know what they should know.
So how do they work better together?
I think that first they probably should start talking to each other. I've worked at a college before, and I think that there are partnerships that colleges and the K-12 system could do to collaborate better. Most of the standards are set at a system level for the public schools and the K-12 system. I think that there are ways that they can work with the systems of higher education just to make sure that there is greater alignment between, especially the English and the math courses, because those are the areas where we see most students needing help in terms of remediation.
And what about financial concerns? Is it a burden for a lot of students to go into school, community college, and free around the country, as there have been suggestions for it to be? There are pockets where it is, but you're paying for these courses. So here you are, you want to be moving ahead into nursing or whatever your desire is, and instead you're paying money to take a remedial math or English course. I'm sure that is something that, you know, if I had to do that, I'd say, are you kidding me? I got to take this course and pay for it before I can study when I want?
You're absolutely right. And in some cases, financial aid does not cover the cost of those courses. So it becomes an even greater financial burden for the students and their families.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. We're talking this hour of the program. It's interesting. We talked about the MATC Promise program yesterday that's allowing students from MPS schools to attend MATC for free with this private partnership. Today, we've got a different angle here, and we're speaking with Dr. Michelle Cooper, president of the Institute for Higher Education Policy, looking at the number of students, a majority of students with A and B grade point average in high school requiring developmental education at the community college level and beyond as well. But we're looking at community college right now because there are a number of students, Latino students, African-American students who begin their college careers at the community college level. So they need these brush-up courses that you have to pay for. Dr. Cooper indicated if you have financial aid, it doesn't cover these remedial courses. So we're trying to get behind this. If you've got an A or B average, do you really need to take these remedial courses? Should community colleges and colleges, for that matter, get rid of these? Are they necessary? Should students have to pay for them before they enter their field of study? And why is it that there are so many students who have to take these kinds of remediation courses? Well, we'd like to hear from you. What do you think? Our phone number, maybe some of you listening have been through that. I would have to take a math remediation course. There's no doubt about that. I won't tell you how I bypassed that one, but I was one lucky girl in those years. But for a lot of people, you're strong in one area and not strong in another. Should you have to take these tests? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. So we'll be with you momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in for Dr. Michelle Cooper, who is president of the Institute for Higher Education Policy. We start our calls with Kay in Wausau. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Good. I'm a teacher. I taught in high school for 20-some years, and I'm now teaching at the college level. And I think the problem is that the high school level finances have been focused on it's the teacher's fault, the teacher's trying to keep their jobs, so they're being pressured to just be easier on the kids, because if the administration would back up a teacher who's being tough, then we wouldn't have the problem that I'm seeing at the college level, because now I'm teaching foundation courses at the college level.
Mm. And what are you seeing at the college level when you talk about the courses you're teaching? What are you seeing?
I'm seeing more and more kids who are being honest with me and saying, yeah, I screwed around in high school. I got away with it. I just wanted to get by. And now, yeah, I need to know this information. I wish I'd done it then.
Mm. Dr. Cooper.
Yes, I'm here.
What do you say?
Well, I really appreciate the caller calling in and giving her perspective, especially since she's worked in a high school and now working at a college. It's very unfortunate, and I do think she's right. Oftentimes what happens in these conversations is that we blame the teacher, and that's a very unproductive conversation. I think we really do have to dissect the entire layers of this onion, and certainly there are systematic things that have gone into place that do limit teachers' abilities to be creative and to be transformative and innovative in the lives of their students. There certainly are things that the students in some cases could be doing a little bit more diligently, and there's an alignment, as I mentioned earlier, with the higher education community, where stronger partnerships and understanding about what is happening in a high school and what is happening at college needs to happen. So there's a lot going on here, and unfortunately, the most neediest students are being caught in this trap.
Mm. Do you think that there is pressure on teachers who are tough, who may be very good teachers in high school, to not be as tough so that, I don't know, rankings won't suffer, so the school can be thought of as a successful school?
Well, I'm not an expert on K-12, so I don't really know, but I certainly have heard those comments made before. And what we don't want to do is handcuff teachers and handicap them to the point that they're not able to really serve students well. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that we are hearing that from teachers and people like Kay who just called in, it warrants our consideration and time to make sure that these things aren't happening. Sometimes in policies, we have unintended consequences. And this might, in fact, very well be an unintended consequence of an otherwise good intention policy intervention.
Mm-hmm. And Kay, what kinds of courses? Oh, Kay's gone. All right. I just wondered what kind of courses you're teaching. Let's go next to Frank in Oshkosh. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi.
My concern as a parent is that in our modern society, we should be able to go online and see what the standards are, where our child is at compared to those standards, and be able to do this for free. We shouldn't have to be monkeying around with not knowing where our children are until the last minute. And, oh, by the way, you're in college, but you can't read. How many times have we seen that in the sports world? I'm sorry, that's all over the place right now. The problem is everyone wants to pass people through, but no one can offend anybody by saying you're not passing the grade, but we'll pass you through. I'm sorry, there's no personal accountability. If you want to go to college, I think that our system, our society, should be able to come up with an easy access system to find out where are you at in comparison to where you're supposed to be in order to accomplish the goals that you want, and this is how you can get there.
All right. Thank you very much, Frank. Dr. Cooper.
Thank you, Frank, for bringing up the point about transparency. His comments are linked to transparency on the K-12 system and how there should be better structures in place for parents and students to understand their readiness levels, where they are at any given time, and be able to intervene appropriately. Certainly, there's a whole lot that can be done there. At my organization, at the Institute for Higher Education Policy, we are focused on that very same issue, but from the post-secondary side. We have been fighting and advocating for better quality data
that really will help students and their families understand their readiness, their ability to matriculate into a particular institution, and not only matriculate, but to succeed. There is a data information gap. Like, we have lots of information out there, but it's not necessarily telling us what we need to know to help students determine their readiness levels, their likelihood of success, and the types of outcomes that they can expect upon graduating. So I support what Frank is saying in terms of better transparency. I believe that greater transparency around data can help us lead to better outcomes and greater accountability.
Thanks, Frank. Adam in Waukesha. Hi.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi, Adam.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the idea that if you're going to college and you don't place in college-level courses, that remedial classes are, like, our nonsense is just that is nonsense. We're expected to be able to perform at a college level, and if you passed your classes in high school, and maybe there should be some connecting to the college level, but you don't remember that stuff when you come to school and do a placement test, it might be unfortunate, but it's not a waste of time to go back and learn, you know, high quality mathematics and reading and writing. I know I placed in college-level courses, but I had been out of school for so long that I chose to pay out-of-pocket as a refresher. And I'll tell you right now, it made my math and, well, not as much writing, but my math skills improved vastly. And to kind of try and get rid of that or say you can't get up to par at college would be... That's, like, not very good educational foresight, I'd say. You should be able to get to the level you need to be at. And by saying, oh, college should pay for non-college learning, financial aid should pay for high school learning that could have been done, it's a slippery slope, I'd say.
Thank you for your comments, Adam. Dr. Cooper, what do you say?
Thank you, Adam. I think Adam brought up a couple of really interesting points. I do agree that it's not necessarily a waste of time, but and when we're talking about students who are just coming straight out of high school, we would have expected that they would have gotten the information that they need to be ready for college, because they just made that step from high school to college. And so while it's not a waste of time, I think it's for them a real shocker that they didn't get this information that they needed or would have needed. And the other thing about it is that there are such large growing numbers of students who are needing remediation, it causes into question what's going on here, as well as the cost. The cost of college in and of itself is an issue for many students,
sure,
and families.
Is.
And when you add in the cost of remediation, that exacerbates that point. Adam. Adam brought up a very good point that I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about here, is that the demographic profile of students who need remediation is further complicated by adult learners and non-traditional students.
Mm-hmm.
Our conversation so far has been centered on students who are coming straight out of high school, but there certainly are adults who do require remediation or developmental courses as refreshers,
sure.
Maybe some skills foundational skills that they didn't get previously that they would need in order to be successful in their transition back to college. And so we should make sure that we recognize that there are some adult learners, non-traditional students, who are taking remedial courses to brush up on skills as they pursue college at this later stage of their life.
And just because we're right on the heels of doing a show with Milwaukee Area Technical College, I was interested to find out that their average student age is, you know, 29, 30 years old. So it is
That's
understandable
about right.
that you would lose some of the math skills that you had, and maybe some English as well, because you've been in the workforce for a long time and not studying.
That's exactly right. I believe, like, the average age for most students who are at community colleges is about 28 years old. The average age is 28. And so these people are not only older, they also have other factors beyond just studying that they're attending to. They're working full-time often. They're often parents. And they are providing for themselves and other family members. So they're juggling a lot.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we as a society need to, if at all possible, get our young people into a community college, into a higher education track much earlier in life, or is that not important, Dr. Cooper?
Well, education continues to be a pathway to the middle class. And many students who are enrolled currently in community colleges, as we discussed earlier, are from minority backgrounds. They're from low socioeconomic status backgrounds. And these students are the ones that we want to make sure get the degrees and credentials that can serve our society. By them getting college degrees, whether it's from a two-year school or a four-year school, it really does improve the economy. It improves the social networks within society, and it helps life become better for industry and businesses. So it's really important, I think, that for students who are academically ready, academically gifted, and are able to handle the rigors of college, that we make sure that's a viable pathway for
right.
them.
Let's go to Alex next in Port Washington. Hi, Alex.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to just preface my comments by saying I have a niece that's attending one of these MATC branches right now, and she falls right into your group. She's 28 years old, and she's been required to take two or three of these remedial math courses. And I'm making these comments. I'm a person that graduated summa cum laude from college, free ride, undergraduate free ride, graduate programs, and I look at the level of mathematics that they're required to learn. They'll maybe 2% of the college population is actually going to use the level of math that they're requiring them to do. So it's not really even remedial math. This is really high-level technical math. Mm. Or even the most intelligent person. I would challenge even this doctor here, if she doesn't have a degree in mathematics, look at these courses and what's required. And I think it's, to be honest, it's almost a way to justify the math department in these places, because to be honest, if they were being taught as something they would even use in the real world, mm-hmm. it's like a very small percentage of the people's careers are ever going to use any of this math again, ever. So I actually question the whole premise of these courses. If you look at the textbooks they're required to use, the things of this nature, even for the most intelligent person, you'd have a hard time completing these courses. And my niece is getting a 4.0, but it takes 20 hours, 30 hours of work every week just to keep that 4.0 mm-hmm. in this class. So if you don't have the motivation to do this, these kids get discouraged and maybe not go on to a degree in right. welding or nursing or anything else.
Yes.
So I challenge the whole math department to look at what they're actually doing.
Well, that's interesting. Spoken from a man who did very well in postgraduate work. Dr. Cooper, what do you say?
I think this is an important conversation, and you, Kathleen, even brought this to the conversation a little bit earlier in our discussion. Certainly, there is a need to make sure that what students are learning in college, regardless of what subject area it is, has some application usefulness in real life. And that's certainly something that needs to happen across the board as well as in math. There are definitely stories of students very similar to his niece who are taking courses where they will not be using those skills at all. And I think that's very unfortunate. But there are also many students who are in remedial courses because they haven't mastered some basic foundational skills in mathematics. So there needs to be a better way of teasing out the two, making sure that we are having students in remedial courses who are getting foundational skills in math, but also applied skills that they will need as they move into their major. And we don't want to waste students' time taking, as I said earlier, calculus or algebra are statistics for things that are not going to be relevant in their day-to-day lives and in pursuit of their career pathways.
Let's go to a couple of messages online. I'll read both of them and then respond as you will, Dr. Cooper. John from Milwaukee okay. called in, sent an email. The high schools that graduate these students should have to pay for remedial courses, not the students. Becky says she attends a technical college and they don't have any two-year programs anymore. She can't even take a core class without passing a remedial math course, even though math is not required for her degree. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Huh. So what do you think? Should high schools have to pay for the remediation here? I mean, this is a financial burden for people. Who should pay for it?
It's definitely a financial burden for people. I think we need to force the system to fix the system. Mm. Having high schools pay, it doesn't fix the problem. And my goal would be, let's fix the problem. Let's actually stop this from happening. There are definitely strategies that are starting to pop up in certain areas that are helping to reduce the need for remediation. For example, students are now able to enroll in dual enrollment programs, where high school students take college courses while they're still enrolled in high school. There are things called early assessments, where the placement exam actually happens for students while they are in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So they are then able to determine their readiness levels before they get to college. There are summer bridge programs that help students in that summer between high school and college. I think those are all short-term fixes that kind of help mitigate some of the concerns, but I really think we have to do a system-wide overhaul to figure out why students aren't getting what they need before they arrive at college. And college professors and high school teachers both have to be at the table for that conversation, and right now very rarely are they both in the same room, let alone at the same table.
Mm, interesting. Alex, thanks for your call. Mike in Madison, hi.
Hi. I've experienced this firsthand. I was a senior in high school taking college-level courses, and I entered into a technical college here in the state. And the placement exam said that I had to retake all my basic courses, even though I was taking college-level courses. I think the placement exam is a cash cow for these universities, and if you have a full diploma from a state school district, you should not have to take remedial classes, and you should not have to take a placement exam. The placement exam is rigged. You can take the placement exam four different times and get four different results. It just doesn't make sense to me. The higher education system in this country is broken. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Dr. Cooper.
Yes, I think Mike is right. I do think that the higher education system is broken. I think that the K-12 system is broken. And I think that we got to put the pieces back together again, because too many students are like Mike. They get caught in this trap. And it's unfortunate, especially in an era where college costs are becoming increasingly more harder for people to pay those costs. We do have to take consideration of how we can mitigate the cost and make sure that people have what they need,
right,
so that we can get them on a fast track to their career.
What we want is more people who have this kind of education, because you're going to have a hard time being real successful, making a good living, if you don't have something that's beyond high school. And it seems as though when it comes to financial problems, holy cow, Dr. Cooper, to get school is unbelievably expensive these days. It's just incredible. No wonder a lot of people can't afford to go to school, or they're working to try to get to school, and then you get rusty on some of your skills because you're 29, you're not 18. We've got a whole host of issues, and it seems as though we're making it harder for people to advance in many areas.
Well, I think that you're on to something for sure. College has always been expensive, though. So it's not as if it's just become expensive. It's always been expensive. But there's a couple things that are converging right now that drive up the visibility of that expense. One is the reduction in state funding to support higher education,
mm-hmm,
and that's causing more and more students and families to dig deeper in their pockets. At the same time they're being asked to dig deeper in their pockets haven't gone any deeper. Their income levels are remaining stagnant. They're not able to bring in additional funds and resources. So the expenses are going higher, but their incomes have stayed pretty much consistently the same. And then the other thing that's making this more, causing it to gain greater visibility is the fact that we need more people with training and education beyond a high school diploma. This is something that people bring up in conversation with me all the time. They'll say, Michelle, does everybody need to go to college? And I'll say, everybody needs some training beyond high school, regardless of what field of study you decide to pursue. Even if you decide to be a mechanic or a plumber or something that requires a trade, the way that our society is now, things are so computerized that you need additional skills beyond what you learned in high school. So post-secondary education is becoming increasingly important for people to have just a decent standard of living. And it is also more and more important for people for whom we want to move out of poverty,
sure,
and into a higher income strata.
Yeah. John in Appleton, hi.
Hey, great show again. Doctor, I thoroughly agree with all that you just said, and I think I have a solution. I like your thoughts on what a year-round calendar could do for people, especially those folks who we want to attract and get into college, you know, those first-year or those first-generation people who, you know, unfortunately, they start out at a disadvantage when they begin kindergarten, and then because of summer break, they keep losing over each summer, and they wind up not as far at high school at after 12th grade as other kids do. So what do you think of the efficacy of year-round calendars like 2 months in and then a month off each quarter of our four quarters of the school year? What do you think about that?
Sure. So that's not something I've studied a whole lot, but I will tell you that the issue around summer melt, which is what you're describing, where students learn lose a lot of their learning over the summer, is very real. Summer melt. Will that help the remediation problem? It could possibly be something that can help reduce it a bit, but until we ensure that there is greater consistency and alignment between what students are learning before they get to college, that's going to be critical. We have to make sure that the colleges and the high schools are teaching students what they need to know to be prepared for college and ready for careers. I can't stress that enough.
Thanks so much for your call, John. And we go next to Gage in Fond du Lac. Hi.
Hello. I agree with the comment just before where you said that students need to get some sort of post-high school education. But I guess the question was in a couple of things as far as the rigor of the math test or the placement test and so on that there is. Why, you know, students, if they're looking to college, why couldn't they, if they're interested in that, why couldn't they take that test between their junior and senior year and then say, oh, they pass and they're good to go and they move on. If they're not, then they have their senior year to do that. Because I used to be a teacher also, and from what I'm seeing is, you know, math is required, I think, and depending on the school, like 3 out of the 4 years of their career and so on. And you would think that hopefully they would get enough within their requirement to be able to get them to the remedial part of it. And I also know through, like, in some technical colleges, depending on what area they're going into, was a different preparatory math test that they had to take because, you know, if you were going into construction, they wanted them to have this basic background in math. If they were going to somewhere else, they wanted this basic. Mm-hmm. And so I think the different entrance tests for math were different depending on you know, the requirements of the final associates or the diploma or whatever that they were getting.
Yeah, Dr. Cooper.
Yes, so I think what you're talking about is what's often called contextualized learning, a very complicated way of just saying that students have direct academic and vocational courses that are going to be linked to their career pathways while they're still enrolled in high school. I think that's a good idea. I think some people are already starting to experiment with that by using dual enrollment programs as the pathway to do such things. And also there's something called fast track courses. These are courses that are accelerated for students while they're possibly in high school, and they can often complete the modules fairly quickly. They don't have to pace themselves as their learning basis instead of going through the entire semester at a slower pace, covering things that they may not need as much instructional time involved in.
Mm-hmm. We'll pause for just a moment. Dr. Michelle Cooper is our guest this hour, president of the Institute for Higher Education Policy, one of the nation's most effective voices in championing access and success for all students in post-secondary education. Our emphasis this hour, the number of majority, actually, of students with A and B grade point averages in high school requiring developmental education at the community college level. This is difficult for a number of college students because you don't get financial aid if you have to take these courses, and you get discouraged if you have to take these courses. So we're looking at what's going on here and how do we encourage people in minority communities, because half of Hispanic college students and a third of Black college students start their higher education paths at community colleges. So you can get so discouraged you may not want to continue. The other part of the equation, of course, is when you're looking at community colleges, it's the number of years that may have gone by before you decide that you are going to go to school and the set of problems that you encounter when that's the case. All right, our phone number, we've had tons of interest in this. We do have one open line right now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter is at K Dunn Show, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Connie is next in Boston. Hi, Connie.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I think we need to keep the remedial classes. Everybody needs to start their freshman year on the same page. You hear from employers all the time how even kids in this country graduating college still are not prepared for the jobs with degrees that they've graduated, and they're not prepared for the workforce. And to be able to compete on an international level and be able to keep companies and jobs in this country, they need to be graduating from college not having the same problems that we're finding graduating from high school.
Dr. Hooper.
Yes. Connie, thank you for your comment. I completely agree that we need to make sure that we have our students prepared for the rigors of the workforce and that they are able to compete exceptionally well in this global economy. The challenge, though, that you raise is that the students aren't getting what they need at various intervals on that pathway to their career. We're not giving them enough of alignment from high school to college, and then when they're in college, we don't necessarily give them a great alignment that prepares them for the workforce. The system is broken. And we do need to fix that because the people who ultimately get hurt are the students and the families who are the neediest students and families, the ones who have relied on the system to work for them, and then they find out at these critical junctures, these critical intervals, that the system isn't working on their behalf. And that's the great disadvantage here.
Thanks, Connie, for your call. Let's go to Larry in Rockford next. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Dr. Cooper and Kathleen. The problem is not that math is required for a college degree. It's the problem is that a college degree is required for so many jobs it should not be.
Hmm.
Employers should not be able to require a certain degree. They should be able to give a test related to what the work entails and let the person see if they can actually do the work. If the person gained the knowledge by going to a trade school, the college, or by walking to the library, they should have an equal chance of getting the job.
Well, what an interesting idea that is. Dr. Cooper.
Well, thank you, Larry. I do believe that there are some fundamental things that you do learn in college that can be useful in the workforce. I think what needs to happen is that they need to show the application of those fundamentals much better. And that's what's probably not happening, so that people can see how this college degree will actually translate into the types of skills that need to take place for them to be successful in the workforce. That conversation is being had all across the higher education community as we speak. People are trying to work to make sure that there is a stronger connection so that the workforce alignment gap is something that we can remedy and solve quite easily. But there is definitely a gap there. And so what we're looking at now in this conversation, Kathleen, is we're looking at an entire pipeline, and we see that there are gaps in various parts of it. So on the K-12 side, there's a readiness gap. And then if you make it through college, there might be a workforce alignment gap. So we need to structure the system much better to have greater alignment so that it is useful and it works for students and families, because right now it's not working as well as it should, or maybe as well as it once did, and we haven't revisited these structures to make it contemporary for living in the 21st century.
Hmm. Don't you wish there were some way, Dr. Cooper, or maybe you're one of these people who is like this, that you could remember all it is you've ever learned? I mean, think of all we've learned. Wish I could just remember all of it.
Yeah, we don't remember all of it, but I do find that sometimes it comes back to you in the most unique ways at the right time. And we need to make sure that students and families are getting those little critical learning moments along their educational pipeline, because when they need it, we want them to be able to have it. Right. And right now, far too many of them don't even have that option.
Larry, thanks so much for your interesting call. Tim in Ladysmith, hi.
Hi, interesting show. Couple observations. It seems to me that, and I'm not sure if this is across the board, but it seems to me that high school education in America is pretty low. Kids who are smart can basically fake their way through it without any effort at all, and it's kind of dumbed down to kids who are just poor students for most part. But also, higher education has kind of geared the country toward college degrees, and really that's not where the bulk of careers seem to be right now. It seems to be in the trade industry. There's such a cry for welders, for people in machine tool, things like that, mm-hmm. and yet that's not considered glamorous anymore. And it's so expensive to go get a four-year degree, and I know numerous people who had never even used their degree. They've got it, and they do something completely different because they can't get a job in it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow,
yeah.
That's my comment.
Thank you. I think there is a drive to get people to go to colleges, and he's absolutely right about all the jobs that are available that are good-paying jobs, you know, welders and machinists and, you know, all IT people. There are a lot of those kinds of jobs available.
Right, and there are not enough people to fill them.
Right.
We have a gap. And certainly, I don't think it's an either-or, meaning I don't think that we should say people need to be in the trade field versus people should be in the high-skilled positions. We need both.
Mm-hmm.
To make this society work, we need people in all of these jobs. And what we're finding is that we don't have enough skilled laborers to occupy the jobs that we have in either one of those sectors. What we find is that we often are going to get people internationally, or some of these jobs get sent internationally because we don't have enough of the skill set right here at home to take care of that. And that is why we have to fix our educational system. People, even if they're going into the trade or getting a vocational type job, they still need to have mastery of some foundational educational understandings. And that is a limitation that we're finding at that level, but we also find limitations on the levels of the high-skilled laborers as well.
Yeah. Dustin is next in Richland Center. Hi, Dustin.
Hi there. I just wanted to make a couple comments. One, along the lines of why are some students ready and some aren't. I graduated from high school about 4 years ago, and I noticed that some students, if I were to be in an LCC class getting a B, and another student was in maybe an algebra A class, something along those lines, they
right.
might be A. And then as you go forward, I'm getting more of a higher education, lower grade, and then they would be getting less, you could call it less education.
All right, your phone is real lousy. I'm sorry, Dustin, but I think we get this idea here. Dr. Cooper, you want to respond?
Unfortunately, I was unable to really hear Dustin very
I'm
well.
Sorry.
Can you recite it
yeah,
for me?
Yeah, I think I wasn't either, so maybe I'm making up what he said. I'm sorry. But I think he was talking about he was in high school. He graduated 4 years ago. He was taking courses that maybe were more difficult, getting A's in them. There were other students who were taking maybe a math course that wasn't as difficult as what he was taking. Or maybe he'd get a B in his course, and they would get an A in their course. So you've got this playing field that isn't quite the same.
Okay. So it's really about making sure that all students have access to a high-quality, rigorous
right.
academic program. And I think we should expose as many students to that who are capable of achieving at that level. I support that.
Yeah. Thank you, Justin. And just quickly, Mary in Milwaukee, almost out of time. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I worked at UWM for 16 years, and there was a program that helped students who were underprepared or at risk. It was called the Academic Opportunity Center, and it was a splendid program that watched students for 2 years. They took a reduced course load. They had their own advisors, and most of them did receive financial aid. But then just this year, it was discontinued because of budget cuts.
Oh.
And so people who really needed support, the rug was pulled out from under them. Mm. And it was a fact that there was always feeling at the university that people shouldn't be there unless they were prepared. But people come to the realization that they want school and need college at different times of their life. Mm-hmm. So they should certainly have that opportunity.
Thank you, Mary, so much for your call. You got the last word on the show. Dr. Cooper, thank you so much for being with us. It was a very lively hour. Thanks.
Thank you.
Dr. Michelle Cooper, president of the Institute for Higher Education Policy. And thanks for all of your calls. Tremendous interest. If you didn't get on the air, I would like to direct you to our Facebook page. I kind of like Facebook. I do like Facebook. And so you can write your comments. And if you like our page, too, then you can get an idea of the, because we'll send you, we won't overwhelm you, but we'll give you notices of shows that are coming up that you wouldn't want to miss. So that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Kendra Smith for coming up with the idea for this show, producing it, and also doing on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Thanks for listening and for contributing. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio, and we'll be with you again on Monday at 1 for all things political.